हरिः चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so then the four aspects of sthana. So gain, so is by conquest or by the fourfold polyphic. So in either way, one is gaining, expanding. Right? Then preservation. Right? Because you have to gain something, then when you gain it, you have to keep it. You don't lose it. Then having not lost it, then you make it grow. Right? And then it's growing, then you start giving it charity. Preservation. As the weeder plucks up the weeds and preserves the corn, even so let the king protect his kingdom and destroy his opponents. In other words, those things that are a disturbance to the kingdom should be removed. Right? And those things that are not, those should be protected. Like as we see here, preservation. You're preserving what's useful. It's not that you have something useful and you're wasteful. Oh, we have so much and it doesn't matter, I'll get more. No, it means whatever is useful is kept, and whatever is not useful, that's removed. So there's never any waste. That king who through folly rashly oppresses his kingdom will together with his relatives ere long be deprived of his life and his kingdom. Right? So that therefore we see preservation meaning you're protecting. You're keeping it properly. It's not a matter of that you're in control so you can do with it whatever you want. No, you're in control means you're the one entrusted to take care of it according to how God says it should be taken care of. Does that make sense? There's no such thing as doing whatever you like. It means there is. It's called the mode of ignorance. It's called whimsical. Right? So you can do that. So this idea, I'm in charge, I can do whatever I like. Yes. But that means that you're functioning in the mode of ignorance. It doesn't mean, but it's supposed to be here, at least in the Kshatriyas, a mix of goodness and passion. So there's no ignorance. Yes?
It's always good to say that you want them to fail, and then all those friends that
even
in Russia, because they didn't follow
the rules. Means your governments, would they have problem?
When there was monarchy.
When they had monarchy. Yeah, it means they do with it whatever they like. Because it's theirs, which is true. But just because it's yours doesn't mean that you can deal with it not according to the rules. Right? See, so what's being missed is that everyone has their quota. You have what's yours. But that's a quota given by God. So technically it all belongs to God. Because you can't say it's yours. Because if it's yours, means when you die you can take it with you. Right, the person dies and then all the money disappears, right? It goes with them. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like you get something, you hide it away, you know, thinking that you'll forget, and then when he dies, then you go and look, it's gone. Oh, he remembered it. Oh, no. You know, no, it doesn't, right? No, it's you can't take it with you. The land stays, everything stays, the body stays. So it's all given as quota by the Lord. So that means if it belongs to God, you're the caretaker. Right? You're the primary caretaker. Others can't tell you how to take care of it. But the point is, if you don't take care of it according to God's direction, then, as it says here, it will be lost. Right? Along with his relatives. Right? He's got, you see, there's these dynasties, and then they just disappear. Right? It means you're talking about the Kuru dynasty. We're going back thousands and thousands of years. If not even more, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, the Kurus were there. You know, why? So, but as soon as they're not dealing properly, then it ends. So that's all. Is that they, because they're in control, so the element of being controlled is what's important, not that one wants to protect. So therefore you have to be in control. You can only protect something that you're in control of. Really? Is that what you're
saying? No. At this point here, when someone wastes, then he's deprived in the next.
Yes. So whatever, if they don't deal properly with something, then next life you don't have. Or if it's very extreme, you see in this lifetime they don't have. You had something? As the lives of living creatures are destroyed by tormenting their bodies, even so the lives of kings are destroyed by their oppressing their kingdoms. Right? Because the king is supposed to be, you know, the one directing the kingdom, so he's like the soul of the kingdom. So if the living entity bothers his body, then there'll be a problem. So the same way the king disturbs his kingdom, then it won't work. So that was preservation. That was just the general principle. Okay. So now it's by governance. So that's the move. In other words, he sees that he's taking care of this on the behalf of the Lord. So therefore, if it's yours, you take care of it nicely. In other words, someone who respects their possessions. Right? If you respect your own possessions, you'll take care of them properly. Right? Because you know their value. So if you understand the value of the kingdom, then you'll protect it nicely. And someone who doesn't, then they won't take care, and they, along with everything, will be destroyed. Right? So someone who doesn't respect this kingdom actually doesn't belong in the position. Preservation by governance. In governing his kingdom, let him always observe the following rules. For a king who governs his kingdom well, easily prospers. So you follow the rules, easily one will prosper. You don't follow the rules, then there'll be a problem. Let him place a company of soldiers commanded by a trusty officer in the midst of each circle, gulma, of 1, 2, 3, or 500 villages as a protection for the kingdom. Right, so depending on the size of the king and the nature of it, then there'll be natural groups of villages, you know, particular areas and this and that. So then he'll place a company of soldiers in each of these places to make sure everything goes nicely. Let him appoint a lord over each village, as well as lords of 10 villages, lords of 20, lords of 100, and lords of 1,000. Right. So each village, then you can find somebody who can run 10, then you can find, you know, still quite a few of them. Then of 2, then one will be prominent. Right? So then that you can also find. But then to find one who can run 100 or lords of 1,000, that would be less. Right? The lord of one village himself shall inform the lord of 10 villages of the crimes committed in his village. And the ruler of 10 shall make his report to the ruler of 20. But the ruler of 20 shall report all such matters to the lord of 100, and the lord of 100 shall himself give information to the lord of 1,000. Because once you get to that level, if you can manage anything bigger than 100, you can manage 1,000. You know, it's...
Yes. That program, Japatata Maharaj, the Bhakti Bhiksha program, is it based on a principle?
I'm not sure if he got it from here. I'm not sure. Or Bhakti Vinod Thakur mentioned something.
I think Bhakti Vinod Thakur made that system, but he probably took the principle from Manu.
Okay. It's a standard thing, because means that the Mayapur constitution is based on Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhishthira. So it tells how to organize the kingdom. So he may have used those principles. I would say he probably used more Mahabharata than he would have used to. Unless you've heard that he was used.
No, I read something, but I don't remember where he took it from. Something that was written by one of the six Goswamis, like the tree of the Bhakti, the tree of the Bhakti, and there's mention how branches are and the sub-roots and like
that. So that, I mean, he's taking from there, so I don't think it would be from there. But it's the same, it's the principle, so it works everywhere. That's why we're bringing out this point, is that someone who's a big manager, then, you know, 1,000, it's not like he has 20, then he has 40, then 80, you know, like that, or 100, then 200. No, once you get up to the 100, then you have the 1,000. That's what we're saying. So you have somebody to run the village or 10 villages. And then someone can run double that. And that's kind of like your sphere. And then you have the ones who can do 100 and those who can do 1,000. Those articles which the villagers ought to furnish daily to the king, such as food, drink, and fuel, the lord of one village shall obtain. Right? So all the things that are supposed to be gained in the kingdom, that's the duty of the lord of one village. Right? We make it the guy on top supposed to get it. No, it's the guy on the bottom supposed to get it. Right? Because he's the one that's dealing with the stuff to get. And if you're in the village, then all the things that are edible, they come from the village. Right? They don't come from the office in the city. Right? Unless he has a, you know, a very nice refrigerator or something like that. But otherwise it doesn't come from that, it comes from the village. So the village head is the one that's supposed to get it. Right? And then it goes up the command. The ruler of 10 villages shall enjoy one kula, as much land as suffices for one family. The ruler of, means just because he's doing that, he'll get that. The ruler of one village is somebody in the village. So if he doesn't have land in the village, is not doing anything in the village, he should not be the ruler of the village. Does that make sense? Because you can rule the village and do your duty, it's not a problem. It's not that big. Right? But the ruler of 10, he'll have to spend more time in that, so therefore he has to have a set amount of land that he knows is going to be there so he can take care of himself. Right? But that means he's doing the work. He doesn't do the work, he goes, somebody else gets it. Kula, it says, as much land as suffices for one family. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, how much that is. The Prabhupada always talked about an acre of land. So that's 3 bigas, but I don't know what the kula. Kula would be Sanskrit, so I've only heard of the Bengali. They call it biga. So 3 bigas makes an acre. Like that. You know, so set off, you have a stick, a danda, it's 4 hands long. 4 cubits, so it's 6 feet. So 80 by 80 of those. So 120 feet by 120 feet. That's a biga. So 3 of those makes an acre. So that's a standard.
This length
is from here to here.
Not from here to here, it's called a knoll. The Gana mentions something like a knoll. Knoll is not a word.
It's a hop.
Hop
means one hand. In English they call it a cubit. Why, I don't know. But it works very well, because you can always work it out. You know, everybody has their hands. The superintendent of 100 villages, the revenues of one village. Right, so 100 villages he's in charge of, revenue of one village he can keep for himself, 99 have to progress up the line. Right? Okay. Oh, here. The rule of 10 villages, the rule of 20, 5 kulas. The superintendent of 100 villages, the revenues of one village. The lord of 1,000, the revenues of a town. The affairs of these officials, which are connected with their villages and their separate business. Another minister of the king shall inspect, who must be loyal and never remiss. Right? Yes.
So it appears it's not much, it's only 1%.
Yeah.
Of what he takes care of.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you see, it gets quite big.
It is big, but it's
yeah,
not
no,
like
it's
huge.
Not, no.
It's not even 10%.
No, no, no. It's small. It's like you said, 1%. You have 100 villages, you get from one village. So if you're 1,000, then a town is like 10 times the size of a village.
Yeah,
yeah, so like that. So you're getting the same. Maybe a touch more, but the point is the more you can do, the more you can also use and all that. Because the point is the person who's going to be running 1,000 villages, he's probably going to be the kind of persons and people he'll be hosting and taking care of will be greater.
Yeah.
So he'll have to have a bigger facility, more servants. He'll probably have to also have his own small, you know, how you say, small army and different things like that to maintain the peace and everything. So, you know, so it requires a lot of that. But then there's on top of that, because it's preservation. So this is how it's going to be managed. At the same, so he's preserving it by managing it properly, you know, taking care of those people, but at the same time, so they get sufficient, right? In other words, the idea is, if you get sufficient, that you won't have less, you won't be inclined to steal. So in other words, these persons are getting sufficient. No one can complain it's less. But at the same time, is then there's a minister to make sure that they're not cheating. Because the cheating with these is quite severe. If they're cheating, the punishment we get to later is quite severe. Yeah.
Most people then should
be sorry. No, head of the village is just one of the locals in the village.
And India was run by this system.
1947. And it survived the Mughals, survived the British, but it didn't survive the Indians themselves. Means, in other words, the British came and conquered the kings, but left the kings in their position. They just had to pay tax and fight for them, that's all. But then the Indians themselves, they conquered the kings and took away their kingdoms. So that's the British understood that the system worked very nicely. So with the Indians, the law was money. You know, for themselves they used British law, but for the Indians they used money. And in each town, let him appoint one superintendent of all affairs, elevated in rank, formidable, resembling a planet amongst the stars. Right? So each town will have a head, like you have the mayor. Right? So he'll manage just like the villages run, because you only have villages and towns. Right? So the village is run by the village head. You know, and then as it goes up, then it shows that they still live in the village. The head of 100 villages still lives on his land in the village. Right, but he may have a bigger house and all that than anybody else. Right, but it's not necessarily he has more land or this or that, because he's getting the revenue of one village. Right, but a town has a superintendent that manages the town.
How is the leader or the head elected? Is he appointed? How do they come to an agreement?
Well, it says here, what is it? Let him appoint a lord of each village.
Oh, so it's coming from the top down.
Yeah, but it may be. It doesn't say, let's see here. But there's a minister that's in charge of all this, so he'll see that it gets done. But generally on the village level, it'll say later, this means it should be somebody that they think is qualified that can do it. But its management is done by a local board that is representative of the people in the village. So up to the lower, how do you say, court, then it's basically democratic. You have a parallel. It's a democratic system. It runs on that level, but the policing of it to see that the democracy is going properly is done by the monarchy. Does that make sense? Okay. You know, something that's generally we put it the other way around. Yeah. You know, but no, it's supposed to, monarchy is supposed to see that democracy goes properly. Because democracy is only a part of the scene. So it means, just like that, the monarchy only controls a part of the scene. But it has influence over everything. So it's the senior of all the systems. Like the kings don't manage the Brahmins. The Brahmins take care of themselves. But they still see that it's going properly. Right? Does that make sense? So then here your Vaishyas, you have your guilds, you know, so your different trades, then they manage themselves, but then you have somebody that's above that. So basically you have all these various aspects of governance that are used singly in one country that would all be functioning together in this particular part. But there's a hierarchy which is higher than the other. That's all. It's not that it should be this one and not that one. It has to be democracy and not monarchy, or communism and not. So no, it's a matter of each one has its place, right? And but it belongs in that place. The communism only works in the village level. So they talk about the grassroots and the people. Yeah, that's where it belongs. It doesn't belong in the Kremlin. That's supposed to be monarchy. Does that make sense? That's the problem, is they can't tell what goes where.
Yeah. So, communism, village level, democracy, a couple of villages.
No, the democracy is then within that also it works. Because it's communist, because they all work together and it's all like that. And because traditionally the village, the land was owned by the village. And so the village, everybody in the village who could work, worked and produced. And then everybody in the village got what they required. That's why you needed a village head, you know, to make sure that everybody was getting what they required. So nobody had individual land. Right? That was started later. I think later in time the British started it. Because if the village owns everything and they're complete, then who needs to borrow money? You know what I'm saying? You have everything. You don't need money. But if you have individual land, then you can sell your land, or you can mortgage your land. You can do so many things to your land that then they can control you. Does that make sense? So these things were started for economic reasons. So that's why economy has to be controlled by the monarchy. Otherwise, for economy, people will do anything. It doesn't matter. They'll destroy anything as long as they make a profit. That's the difficulty. So it has to be controlled. Right? But at the same time, as one could say, well, the monarchy, because of that power, then they'll get over. So they have to be controlled by the intellectuals. So you have your natural hierarchy.
So what system will be the intellectual Brahman? They'll be working on
that. They're just, they follow themselves. Or they themselves know what to do. They follow it.
So it would be the proper use of anarchy.
It would be proper anarchy. Yeah. Yeah. But they're not going against. That's the thing, because they're following the spiritual laws. Therefore, they don't go against anything else. So you don't really have a good title for it. Okay. You know, just like, what was the governance of the church, you know, previously? You know what I'm saying? Nobody, no king could control them. They controlled themselves. But what do you call it? You understand? But it's not a monarchy. You understand? So it's the same principle. It runs on its own, it's separate. But it has things to see that it stays within, and has its, it defines what it can do and what it can't do. The problem is in your modern sense is that people they make up their own rules. So then it's a problem.
There's no common element.
Yeah, there's no, because otherwise what's there? You know, it's not the... So they make up these things that don't match. You have kings, so they have many wives. But then the church says you can't have more than one wife. So then they start a new religion. Right? Just to have, so they can have a different wife. That's all, you know. So that's the point, is that these things are already worked in. All the things that people require are already there in the Vedic system. So it's just a matter of understanding it and managing it properly, right? Having the broad enough vision to be able to accommodate. You know what I'm saying? So the clergy himself generally wouldn't have more than one wife, because it's going to be too much endeavor. It is hard enough to balance your occupation, your sadhana, and your family life. So if you increase the family life, how do you balance the others? So therefore, they wouldn't follow it. But if the kings follow it, it's fine. They have the facility. Does that make sense? You know. Yes.
So basically, this is quite an idea that you will only work 5 to 3, so if you have a few, something is not there in the Vedic system.
Means ownership is there, but that's what I'm saying, is that the Vaishyas work on capitalism.
How does that fit with the...
Villagers are shooters. Just because you farm... See, there's this idea that because you farm, you're a Vaishya. No. Anybody farms. You know what I'm saying? A Vaishya, it's like this. You have this little plot of land... Right? And the guy goes out there himself and he's plowing it like that. Okay? That's a shudra. Right? But now someone else goes out there, you farm, you come back next year, and he's sitting in the house, other people are farming. That's the Vaishya. Does that make sense? It means, you know, Prabhupada tells a story. You know, that mullet, right? So he was from that, you know, that village, I think, Adi Saptagram, where all the mullets were from originally. And so then he came into Calcutta. So at that time he visited the biggest mullet that was there. Because at one time the mullets owned Calcutta. All the land was theirs. But, you know, by bad management, and that, they, you know, slowly sell it off to maintain themselves. Then they lose everything. So they owned Calcutta. So he went to the biggest one. So maybe I'll preface this one by a story about this one. Okay, so, you know, he was, you know, Bengalis are not big guys, right? You know, they're kind of smaller, you know, petite. They wear, you know, they dress very unassuming. You know, the gentleman, he wears a white dhoti, white shirt. The only way you can tell the difference between him and an ordinary, you know, person is how white it is, you know, how nicely ironed it is, and how well he wears it. Otherwise, it looks exactly the same. So you have to be a little aware. So he drives up in his car, you know, who knows what it was, but in those days, you know, they're always, you know, something nice, Jaguars and this and that. So he drove up to, in Calcutta, what was that time was the biggest shop that sold chandeliers. And he walks in the shop. Right, so when he walks in the shop, you always have these, you know, people, the salesman and the security and all that. So then they came up to him and informed him that, you know, I'm sorry, I think you've walked into the wrong shop. This is not for you, right? These are chandeliers, are very expensive and all that. You know, what you're looking for, so you know, you go to this other shop. So they didn't know who he was because they couldn't tell the difference because he looked like anybody else. So then, you know, he said, you know, expensive house, man. What, you know? So he pulled out a wad of money, right? And oh, and now he's an okay guy, right? You know? And then he says, "What's your most expensive chandelier here? Your biggest, most expensive, fanciest? Oh, they take him over this one. It's some big thing, very elaborate, very special, and all this and that." And they said, "I'll take it," right? Puts down the cash, right? So they're all impressed. And says, oh, "Okay, so where should we take it?" Says, "My car's outside." So they take, you know, all the assistants take it outside. Where to put it, you know, and this, that, that. Says, no, put it down here behind the car. Says, behind, no, on the ground. Says, okay. So they put it on. They can't figure out what's happening, so they're standing there. So he gets in his car and has his driver drive back and forth over it a few times and then drives off. Okay. So in other words, they have money. Okay. So, now, going to the next story. So this one Malik, he came to Calcutta. And he came to him and you know, got an appointment, saw him in his office, and he came to him and said, you know, I'm from the, you know, the Mullet family, and so, you know, we're good Vaishyas and all that, so I'm asking if you can give some capital advance, and, you know, so I can start a business. He gave his whole plan and everything like that, And so then, so I won't be a loss. And, you know, he was trying to point out how he's going to be good. And so then the senior Malik, he looks at him, very seriously and said, so you are a Vaishya? He said, yes, like this and that. So if you're a Vaishya, says, come with me. He stood up, went over to the window, right, opened the window, and then pointed down in the street. Because when the Malik walked in, he noticed a dead rat in the gutter. He says, there's your investment. Because at that time, the plague had broken out, so the government was giving 2 rupees per rat. If anybody brought a rat in, they'd get 2 rupees. He says, if you're a real Vaishya, you go down there, pick up that rat, get your 2 rupees, and invest and start your business. So the young man, he did. He went down, got the rat, got his 2 rupees, and in time, he became the biggest mullet in Calcutta. That's a Vaishya. Right? We have this idea, if you sell something, you're a Vaishya. No, that's a salesperson. You know what I'm saying? Means the businessman can sell stuff, just like he can clean his shop, he can go to the market, he can set up the display, he can do all that. But he hires people to do that because then he can do bigger. Right? So, now, does that make sense? So in other words, if the first year he's selling stickers, fine. Great, you got to start somewhere. But if you come back after a few years and he's still selling stickers, and after 20 years he's still selling stickers, he's not a Vaishya. It's that easy. Does that make sense? So that's the way it is. They're salespersons. It's an art. You understand? Yes.
So that means that only Shudras stay where they are, and the other orders, they progress?
Yes. I mean, he'll by age become more and more expert at it. After a while, he can sell a sticker to anybody. like that. But the point is, he remains selling stickers. Right? It doesn't necessarily mean he's a Shudra. Like if Brahman did business, he may not progress much because he's not a Vaishya. You know what I'm saying? So you sometimes get devotees, Brahmins, and they'll do some kind of business, some little thing like that. It doesn't get any bigger because they don't want it to get bigger. The Shudra would like it to get bigger but can't make it bigger. The Brahman, it doesn't matter. It's enough. It maintains him, so he's not going to put any more time. Yes?
So the core characteristic of a Vaishya is that they make money.
Yes.
And so, but there are other characteristics to Vaishyas.
They also give in charity. No, but you do have a class of Vaishya who they can't make money, but they have the Vaishya brain, so they're very clever. So they're very expert at getting short-term projects done. They're good as, it means, one of the terms, they're good gophers. You have to get something. It takes a responsibility in that, but it's short enough term that the gaining of it is the profit. They have to go from here to Bombay and go to this one and get this and that and bring it back here. They can do that. You know what I'm saying? But it has to be short enough term to fit into there. The smaller the Vaishya, the smaller the term. So you have to be able to judge when you're engaging them how big or small they are. Because somebody can last a few hours or a few days or a few weeks, a few months, but they can't go very long. They can only go long term if they're getting the profit. Like the big businessman, he has a 20-year plan. And he starts off with some little thing, picking up, collecting, tins and iron and everything like that. Come back in 20 years and he's got this huge, factory where he manufactures all of the, metal and, Eastern India, stuff like that. So those kind of, that's the thing. Does that make sense?
Typically, these marwaris are...
Marwaris are, yeah. Means every culture will have its prominence of what is the prominent varna. Like Bengal, Kashmir, and, parts of like South then the Brahminical culture is the prominent. But you have all four there. But kind of the way they'll dress or interact or the marriages will be along that line. But like Rajasthan, it'll be Kshatriya, like that. But you have the Marwari class, you have this. It means in the Marwaris, you have your Brahmins, you know, like that. So you also you just have everything, you know. Your Western culture is bourgeois also, so it's Vaishya culture. Like that, that's the prominent thing. You know, you have money, you have facility, then you know you're doing well. You know, you're an administrator, who's ever heard of it? I remember ourselves as had, I mean, that one family friend who, they were always on the city council. You know, and they were very different than other people. Like that. There were the intellectuals, you know, there were many because it was a university town. Right? Then you had that one person I knew of like that. And somehow or another we never hung out with business people, so I didn't grow up with that. Like that. And then you had the local farmers. Like that. So is it very interesting? So but they're very different. You know, they're very refined, they're very considerate, think of all kinds of things. They listen, they want to know something, they listen first. Then they'll make a very strong opinion about it. But generally those in the intellectual, those who listen don't make an opinion. And then when you go lower, they have an opinion but won't listen. But these guys will listen. Because they don't know. And then the last one, when you say it all, they put it all together. And if it's a value, great. And if it's not, they'll say it's useless. They're very, very different. Okay. Kshatriyas are quite different to the other. In the Western culture, you have the, you know, the clerics and that. But how much of the monarchy is left? How much of the nobility is left? You don't see it hardly. They worked hard to get rid of it. I even think they had laws after World War I that the term Vaughan in the name, you know, which is the noble name, couldn't be used like that. You know, so they make laws like that. They just tried to get rid of it. Yes.
So in the case of the village, the leader of the village take the position of the Vaishya because...
You know, it's not so much that. It means he'll have more of the Kshatriya element, but he might just be a Shudra like everybody else. But he's a managing Shudra. Like, let's say, the guy has a business, right? He has 10,000 workers. And he has supervisors that take care of the different areas. Those supervisors are Shudras. Does that make sense? Management's an art. That's why when we use the term manager, and that makes you a leader. No, manager can be anybody. Anybody manages. You know what I'm saying? So to know management, that's why you can go to school to learn management, but not be the Vaishya, or not be the administrator. You know what I'm saying? Do you hear of people going to school learning management and then becoming leaders of countries? No, you hear of people doing law and becoming leaders of countries. Right? When they do management, they work for a Vaishya.
My doubt is that the mother mentions that the sutras meant to assist the other varnas.
They are assisting. They get all that. They furnish everything that's required to the society. You know what I'm saying? You have to take what's the prominence. He's out there. He's in the village. He's farming and that, and hanging out with the villagers. But he's the one that says, "Okay, this is what we do." You know, just like in the family, you know, the father says what to do. You know, if it's a bigger family, the grandfather. Or in some families, it's the grandmother. You know what I'm saying? But that the maker of the Kshatriya, and now everybody pays tax. And no, it's just, you know, it's just somebody manages. You know, you have a bunch of brothers and sisters hanging out, you know, like that, and they want to play a game. Somebody manages. You understand? So that's what I'm saying. Management's an art. So here you're using that. But they get up, they go up higher. But there's still a governor of a province is still a Shudra. I mean, you think of Ramananda Rai, he was the governor of Madras province. Right? So that was Prataparudra's kingdom. Part of his kingdom. So that meant it connected to Orissa. So that meant, you know, Andhra, Tamil Nadu, you know, would have been Madras, I think it went all the way, most south. I think farther south was not Madras province. It was more the north of Tamil and like that. But he's the governor of that. So he's managing the whole thing. He's a shudra. Because he's just doing it and he's getting paid. Here they're getting their payment. Does that make sense? But someone could do it as a business. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's his name? Raghunath Das Goswami's uncles.
Govardhan and then...
Mazumdar. So they're Vaishyas. Right? So, but they were, their business was tax collecting. Right? You know, and they did okay. Not that.
Especially in the village, there's a system of respecting the elders. There's a whole social system.
Yeah, there's a social system. But somebody has to manage it, but it's not necessarily the oldest person who's managing. You want to have somebody who's, you know, has enough energy to run around. But he will take advice. Because this principle of whoever's managing things has to take advice from seniors, that principle goes from the king on down. Right? So, it means you're managing the family, but you take advice from seniors in the family. Right? Does that make sense? So you're managing the village, so the senior persons in the village you take advice from. Does that make sense? You know, same way, you're managing the town and those who are senior in the town. The principle's the same, it's just that here it's more clear. You know, it's in its bigger form, so here it's explained in detail. Because otherwise we'll explain it in the family, explain it. And then it's like we've heard this a million times. And is it? Let that man, okay, and in each town let him appoint one superintendent of all affairs. Elevated in rank, formidable, resembling a planet amongst the stars. Let that man always personally visit by turns all those other officials. Let him properly explore their behavior in their districts through spies appointed to each. For the servants of the king who are appointed to protect the people generally become knaves who seize the property of others. Let him protect his subjects against such men. It means you have to manage like this because that's the only way to do it, because it has to go all the way down to the grassroots. But the point is the tendency is officials always go corrupt. So therefore we have the system of this, you know, one village, 10 village, 20 village, 100 village, 1,000 village. Then you have a minister that's supposed to see that all this is going on properly. So that minister appoints someone, a superintendent of a town, to watch all the villages in that area. You know, in other words, all those superintendents in that area. Right? So it's just easy. Where there's a town, then there'll be so many villages. So all those group of superintendents, that superintendent watches. Right? So he's connected directly with the minister. So that's the monarchy. Well, the other one, then that's your, you know, your how do you say? These other levels of governance.
Okay. All right. So, in our application of monarchy, if it's a city, it means you have to be connected to many villages.
Meaning have to be means?
In terms of production, in terms of resources.
It means the town should be able to produce its own. Like that. But that means we'll see later when you define a town, depending on the size, like every village has to have a certain amount of land around it so that's production's big enough for the village. So the town, it's even greater. So that's where all the cows go, all the farming is, everything like that. So each town, that's why there's a limit. You don't get where this side of, you know, the street is one municipality and your friend on the other side of the street's in a different municipality. But you won't have that because there'll be land in between. And that land no one lives on. That's where the cows and the farming goes on. So the town can go up to a point and then that's it. So the towns can't connect to each other. Because they have to have that much land. Does that make sense? So Yeah. So it has stuff.
Some people have it, but the lens are outside. It's not almost the same cloud.
Yeah. I mean, previously everything was like that, but then the problem is that they're able to, through business, make money, so they do it, but they, eventually is that you can't make business if you starve to death. So they kind of like forget that aspect. Let the king confiscate the whole property of those officials who, evil-minded, take money from suitors and banish them. Right? In other words, so those officials that we were talking about, heads of, you know, villages, 10 villages, 20, 100, 1,000, if they are taking bribes and money from people like that, then he takes everything that they have and banishes them from the kingdom. Right? So therefore, you know, they're quite strict. For women employed in the royal service and for menial servants, let him fix a daily maintenance in proportion to their position and to their work. You do, your position is higher, you get more. Your work is greater, you get more. Basically. Unless they want to go to the forest, they can always do that. Forest is there for everybody. So in other words, don't take bribes. Huh? Watch out for strangers, yes. But the point is they always have spies because, you know, means that superintendent of each town, he has spies, so he's always checking. Even if they think it was, what's his Vlad? He used to do in Hungary. What was Hungary? Transylvania. He used to. You know, he and his. You know, how you say ministers? They would dress up as ordinary people, right? And then they would come into a shop that they, you know, either they're just checking or they've heard something about. And then they start doing, you know, buying things or doing things. And then they watch. And if the person cheats, then immediately, you know, he calls his men and they take him outside and execute him right on the spot. And if he doesn't, then they leave. You know. Point is no one cheats. So the king would see to that. Because otherwise, if he's cheating, all the people get disturbed. So that means they have less money. So, you know, so they can't enjoy themselves. So that they're not going to be peaceful and happy. And also then they can't pay the taxes properly. Right? So neither is he paying and neither can the people pay. So then how do you run the things properly and how are the people satisfied? Because the point of business is you make money for yourself. That's fine. But it shouldn't be you make money and other people are suffering. You know, just like you can't run a governance and other people are suffering. So it's the same principle. The common person has to, you know, be able to prosper, you know, according to his position. Does that make sense? You know, that's protection. Yeah. Okay. One pana must be given daily as wages to the lowest, six to the highest. Likewise, clothing every 6 months, and one drona of grain every month. So that would be payment for those who work in the royal service, you know, as menial servants. Okay. They get one pana. I'm not sure. I think later it talks about it, but there's one place just that I think later when they get into money, when they get into taxes, but specifically fines. I think it's brought out. It says what it is. And I think we have it in there. We've worked it out. What it's worth. But they get a pana, they get clothes every 6 months, and one drona of grain a month. You know, one for the lowest, six for the highest. So depending on what they do. So it's fixed. Because everything else gets fixed also. Prices are fixed by the government. Otherwise, if you have the Vaishyas, they'll do anything. Yeah.
All right.
So what is the idea of modern government? They put everybody in anxiety for the maintenance, just people, you know, struggle for existence.
Because it's run by the bourgeois. It's not run by actual government. It means you do have those that are within it, so then, but whatever is the point, but it's got to be that the taxes are, means if everybody's productive, means if you have 40% of your population is not working, then that means who is working you have to tax more. The point is everybody should be working, then everybody's taxed less. But then the point is you can't be making money beyond what's required. You know what I'm saying? The point is to live. But we create this artificial needs. You know what I'm saying? It's like you can get from here to there on a horse, right? You don't require a $1.2 million car. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, and if you want to go in that kind of style, then, you know, what's his name? Indra goes with, you know, 10,000 horses, right? You know, who has a 10,000 horsepower car, right? So Indra has. You know, so that's the way to go. But then all those horses have to be taken care of, so how many people are in the stables? You know what I'm saying? So many people are taken care of. They'll say, oh, these wealthy people, that they have so much, they enjoy so much, it's a waste of money. But how many people they have to maintain to enjoy it in that lifestyle? You know, so they got 20 people in the kitchen. So it's 20 people in the house they're maintaining. So you get rid of them, then 20 people are out of a job. You know, the point is the more you're making, the more you can control, the more facility you should naturally have. Because you're doing something greater. So if everybody's taken care of nicely, then no one minds that. The difficulty comes is when there's exploitation, then your common person, because a common person doesn't mind that the king's rich. He only minds if he's so poor he can't function. But kings are supposed to be rich. It's just the way it is. Because if they're not rich, how do they run the country? Is that it? Okay. Augmentation. Okay, so now he preserves. So there's a general point, and so he does that by governance. Right? So he gained things through war or policy, it means through conquest or politics. And then he preserves it through proper governance, right? And now he'll augment it by different things. So there's taxes and duties and taxes. Having well considered the rates of purchase and of sale, the length of the road, the expense for food and condiments, the charges of securing the goods, let the king make the traders pay duty. Right? In other words, it's not just whatever you like. It's a matter of what it costs a person, right? If this goods comes from very close by, you know, you just pick it up in the village and bring it right into the city and, you know, immediately in the morning, right? You buy it in the morning, you bring it in the morning. You know, the road is short. It's easy to bring. You don't have to keep it somewhere. You didn't have to worry about all kinds of side expenses. So then the point is it costs less. He'll be selling it for less, you know. If it's something you can sell for more, he can take more tax. But it's come from a long distance, so therefore he's had to buy it. It's expensive to buy. He has to stay in, you know, hotels on the way, eating. He has to keep it secure, so he has to hire people to protect it. All that's going to cost him money, so he's not going to make that much. So much of the time you charge less for that. What would be surprising to see is that the tax on gold is less than on other things. Because it's so expensive, you can actually make very little off of it. You know, so little things like that. So he has to consider all those things. Then the traders pay duty.
All right. It's interesting. Diamonds are tax-free. Many places in the world. No tax on that. At all.
Because they probably figure that the people who have diamonds drink so much hard liquor that they'll make all the money there. Right? Because the guys that don't have the diamonds drink beer, so you know, they have to get it off of something else. So in other words, it has to be fair. Because now the traders, why it's taken like this? Because other things is the guy grows grains. So then, you know, a sixth of it, the grain, let's say if you grow 600 kilos of grain, so 100 kilos goes to the king. Right? So it's obvious, because you're in the village and you have the people who deal with those things, and so that's taken care of. Problem comes is that traders, they get something from one place and selling it in another and all that, so you have to catch them, you know, in some way from the business, either as they come into the town or if they have their regular shop or whatever it is. So then they'll give the same tax. So it's still 1/6. You know, does that make sense? An equivalent of that. But the point is that 1/6 may not be by volume. Because the profit on some things is very, very narrow. So it'll be 1/6 out of that narrowness. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what is profit, you can take 1/6 of that. Just because they have big overheads, and you know, like some things they have big, what do you call it? When it's all gross or something? All the money that comes through. Is that gross or net or?
No, net is this. Big turnover.
The turnover, whatever it is. All that, someone says, okay, you have to give this much because you guys turn over millions. But they may not be making that much profit. So you have to see is what is the actual profit. That's what it says. After due consideration, the king shall always fix in his realm the duties and taxes in such a manner that both he himself and the man who does the work receive their due reward. In other words, the man's worked for it, he's produced it, so he should get a proper reward, and at the same time, the king should get his tax. So it shouldn't be that he gets more of a reward and the king doesn't get anything, or the king gets more and the man doesn't get. Because if the man doesn't get, he doesn't produce. If the king doesn't get, he can't protect the kingdom.
There was a discussion before when the devotees were avoiding to pay taxes, and it's really for the karma, so we shouldn't pay.
No, but still, they're protecting. I mean, technically, Brahmins shouldn't be taxed, but then one should be living as a Brahmin. You know what I'm saying? Brahmin, because Brahmin doesn't mean Brahmin. Devotees are all Brahmins by ashram. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't necessarily mean, and by understanding of the philosophy and practices, but it doesn't mean by occupation they're Brahmins. So if they're living full-time in the temple and doing that, even if they're not, let's say, Brahminical in the occupation, you know, they clean or they do something else, but still they're living that monastic lifestyle. There should be no tax. But if they're not living, like they're living in their house and doing their own thing and whatever they like, then if what their occupation is, if it's not as a Brahmin, they're not doing full-time deity worship or preaching or yajnas or something, then there's a tax. Because you have to look at it. In Ram Raja, was anybody not a devotee? They're all devotees. Ayodhya, everyone's a devotee. So that means there's no tax? How do the kings function? You know what I'm saying? Dwarka, there's tax. Why did Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Baba and others go to Mathura?
To pay tax.
To pay tax. So it's not that, well, I'm a devotee, we don't pay tax. No, if you're a devotee and you're doing, you know, full-time Brahminical work, you don't pay tax because you don't make something that's taxable. Because you're not producing. You're living by charity. You know what I'm saying? Shudras don't pay tax because they're just taken care of. Right? You know, the guy gets apana, you know, he gets every 6 months some clothes and he gets one drona of grain a month. There's no tax. So the Vaishyas pay tax. You know what I'm saying? Vassal kings will pay tax. You know what I'm saying? You know how much easier the government would be if you only taxed the business people? Right? Every Shudra has to pay tax. And he goes nuts doing it. And how crazy it is. All you have to do is tax the businesses. And it's like your whole problem goes down and your government expenses go down, everything goes down. So much easier.
But the business people run the government, so they escape the tax.
So that's why you put it on the shooters. Yeah. Clever.
Yes. So what is, if the sutra is actually producing something like a carbon level, you get some profit from that sutra
exactly? If he's coming and selling it, then yes. You know, if he's acting as a trader, means if he's working, if he's a carpenter, that he just works for you, then no. But if he works on his own, then he could be taxed. But generally speaking, the government takes tax by one day a month they work for the government for free. That's how the government taxes skilled labor. As the leech, the calf, and the bee take their food little by little, even so must the king draw from his realm moderate annual taxes. Right? You know, it's not that the leech bites, latches onto you and, you know, sucks everything out like some sci-fi movie or something like that. You know, no, it takes a little bit and goes away. You're still alive, so it can come back tomorrow. Right? Right? Like that. Bees also, they take a little bit and go away. Other bees come and visit the same flower. Right? Because it's not that the one bee takes everything. Right? Because if they did, they wouldn't be able to fly, right? A 15th part of the increments on cattle and gold may be taken by the king, and the 8th, 6th, or 12th part of the crops, depending upon how was the season. Right? 6 is your maximum. But if it was a lean year, then you take a 12th. If they only got half the normal amount, you only take half the tax. Not that the tax stays the same. So that's why you need superintendents. You have to know that, okay, there was a drought in this area, so therefore, you know, everything was less, so therefore the tax is less. And if that's the way it is, people aren't going to complain. So, yeah, cattle and gold, because, you know, they don't increase that quickly. He may also take the 6th part of trees, meat, honey, clarified butter, perfumes, medical herbs, substances used for flavoring food, flowers, roots, and fruit. So all these things that natural part of the land and that, then he can take a 6th. So we can see is what's grown and what comes from the forest and all that is that kind of, in other words, you know, agri-horticulture kind of things, that's a 6th. Other things then may have different. Okay, then he's augmented through his taxes. Right? Does that make sense? So he's gained by the politic, so he has things, but he augments by his taxes. Right? Bestowing, protection of the Brahmins.
Yes.
How much you can keep.
Means,
what does that mean, keep?
How much you can use for yourself? Is it somewhere limited?
If he wants his kingdom to run nicely, then...
No, it's not like...
How much can you spend? But I mean, just saying, how many planes do you need? You know what I'm saying? How often do you go somewhere? Even, you know, you have your house and... You know, Milan, you have one in the, you know, the French Riviera, you know, you have one in Monaco. Yeah, Monaco, you have one in Paris, you have London, New York, LA, Tokyo. It says, how often can you go to them? You know, because you're there, the family, how often do they want to travel? They got programs with their friends and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So even if you have all that, how much can you do? You know what I'm saying? And people who have like that, they know how much it costs, so therefore they're quite careful. You know, they don't fly more. I know one devotee in Bombay, he flies back and forth in his own private jet 2 times a month between London and Bombay. But he doesn't travel 3 times. You know, because, you know, that's what works or what he does. You know, because once you get up there, you don't spend more. Because generally the amount they have is, what can you buy? What else can you buy? I mean, after what you hear about guys that have lots of cars and that, what do they have? 20, 30, 40, maybe 50, 60. I think I heard of one guy who had 80 cars. Okay? But most of you're not changing them. You know what I'm saying? You have a 1932 Stutz beer cap. You don't change it for something else. You just have it.
Good chance on a basketball.
Yeah, you could change. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So two or three cars will change. Most of them are just there. But I mean, how many can you use? You know what I'm saying? It's like you only have so many occasions and only so many kids. So therefore, what can you do with them? There's a limit. So at one point, those who actually have it, it runs out, it stops. You know, you've gotten up to a point, it works. You don't need... Does that make sense? So the point is you have that, and you have that you have to maintain your kingdom. So you don't want to spend more. So it's just like even in the European... I was just looking at something. You have these palaces that were made by the Rothschilds. You're Rothschilds? Most heard of Rothschild. Right? So they're a group of German Jews that were very expert in business and banking. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you have a, what do you call it? Rothschild or something.
Rothschild.
Huh? Yeah, that's the German. Well, in English, American, you say Rothschild, but it's actually German is Rothschild.
Rothschild.
Yeah. Okay. So you've heard of the Rothschild. Yeah. Okay. So back in the 1700s, one of them made the family really big, right? So they would build these houses or these mansions, and one king was mentioning that, you know, seeing the mansion, he says, kings couldn't afford this. So, I mean, what he saw, a picture of it, I guess he didn't know what it was, but he says, no king could afford this. This must have been built by the Rothschilds. You know, only they could do that. Because they have all the money, but what do they have to spend it on? They don't have anything to protect, they're just the properties. But a king makes money, he has to maintain the whole kingdom. So actually the king has less to spend on himself than others. So therefore, if they're building like they built their Versailles, they must have had a lot of money. Right? That was Louis XIV? Yeah. But he was the one that worked out this whole thing of the state being the main thing, not the king, and the king being the first citizen of the state. So therefore, they could raise an army and he conquered Europe. So therefore, he could build Versailles. But before that, they didn't. And after that, they didn't. Right? I think most of his properties are now museums. You know. Okay. So the point is that you have to run the kingdom. Because for them, running the kingdom is what's important. That's their occupation. Right? And then once you've built a nice place and you've gotten your crystal chandelier, you don't have to buy another one. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Once Michelangelo's painted, you know, pictures on the ceiling, you don't, you know, next year have them removed and paint something else. Does that make sense? So there's a limit to what means even that you go crazy. Once you get up a certain limit, even if you go crazy, you can't spend anything more because how much does it cost? You know, how much does a pair of shoes cost? Okay, for us to think, wow, that's very expensive shoes. If somebody works in millions and billions, you know, a pair of, you know, $200 pair of shoes isn't that much. How many can you get? How many are even worth buying anyway? Does that make sense? And so that's it. Does that make sense? You know, was it the Philippines? The president of the wife when they have stood up, she had 3,000 pairs of shoes. But probably if you took all that together, I mean, there's people that have cars that are more expensive than that. You know, it's just outrageous, 3,000 shoes. Okay, so she's a shoe fetish. You know, she was in the shoe. But I'm saying, but, you know, how many more can you buy? They're saying there's a limit what you can do. So what we're saying is that if you have the responsibility to run the kingdom, because if the kingdom's not run, the people aren't protected, you don't maintain your position. So you wouldn't want to spend more that have a bad effect on that. Those who did, lost. Those who spent more than they should have, lost. Is that the same thing? Okay, so that finishes today. Joining protecting the Brahmins. Okay, then morning. Okay, yeah, then it's 30 duties. Okay. Yeah, that gets interesting. It's very interesting to note that in the whole Manu, the only place where everybody was very absorbed and very having a lot of questions, you know, is the section where we get the kings. Everything else is kind of like, what's that? This one is, yeah, okay.
But I'm then said that the Bhagavatam is about kings, but it's interesting. It's about Brahman, his Buddha.
No, you do have Brahmas. There's not one Vaishya in there. The Puranas and that don't talk about Vaishyas and Shudras.
It's about kings, because kings deal with them.
Kings and big Brahmas, because they're the leaders. Because that's where they follow Shastra, the noble character and qualities. Like that. You do have Shastras that talk about Vaishyas, and they're wild. I mean, they're crazy. You know what goes on in those. Like most of the stories in Hita Pradesh are about Vaishyas and Shudras. Though it's given in context of kings. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Let's see what was the context. That the situation was there, they had to do something. But they had to do something on the spot. So the minister is telling the king, you have to be able to function on the spot and do something immediately, just like the wife of the businessman who was having an affair with both the father and the son. Like that. Okay? So, there was this wife of this Vaishya, right? So, then she, because he was always out on business, so she had somehow or another made a relationship with the judge, and also with his son. But neither of them knew about it, and the father didn't know about either of these. So one day, then, she's at the house, and then, who comes? Yeah, the father comes, and then the son comes, so then she gets rid of the father. By some pretext, I don't remember the details. And then the husband walks in, so she sits the son. Oh, yeah, that's it. The son showed up. She put the son in the closet, and the husband showed up. So she had the judge, the judge's son, and her husband walked all in almost at the same time. So she stuck the son in the closet. She told the father to take a stick and march out of the house like he was smoking angry. And not even talk to the husband. If he comes in, just be like this and go out. So then the husband comes in and goes, what was that all about? He says, I don't know. I think it was the son was something. He did something wrong. And then, you know, like that. And he said he was going to kill him. And the son ran away. And he saw me. He took shelter here. And I got him in the closet and all that. And so now the husband's gone. Now he can leave. And so then, then the husband, escorted him out the back so he could get rid of it. Go. He says, like that, you have to be clever with the situation. These are the stories that the Shastras talk about the Vaishyas and Shudras. Right? So if they're not in context of this higher thing of the kings, they're really boring. I mean, really boring. Like that. I think it's, what do you call it? There's this one Shastra. It's like 9 volumes. And that's one, I think, hundredth of what was originally there. Yeah, or at least one-tenth of first-class prime Gandharva Prajalpa. And the stories are, they're all true. There's not one made-up story. Everyone is true. And they're so wild, you've never heard about it. I mean, you can't imagine that this could happen. But I got as far as three stories, and I couldn't listen to any more. It's just so mundane. You know? And there's hundreds of stories. But it's basically all about Vaishyas and Shudras. Because what's the gossip with Brahmins and kings? There's no gossip. But with the Vaishyas and Shudras, plenty of gossip. Like that. So everything's there. It's just so that's why it's always the high grade Brahmins and Kshatriyas. It's not even ordinary Kshatriyas. It's high grade. Okay. So then tomorrow bestowing so the protection of the Brahmins.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurudeva.